This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Islamophobia, it's a subject that's all over the media, but these talking head exchanges frequently break down and get ugly. There aren't many opportunities to have civil, thoughtful dialogue about this complicated issue. And it was an issue that drove the last presidential campaign. Here's what Republican nominee Donald Trump had to say.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice.
Some said those comments were about strong national security. Others said they were demeaning towards peaceful Muslims that live in the United States and those who come to the United States as refugees, as victims from groups like ISIS. Trinity University will present a performance of To Be Honest, a campus production composed entirely from interviews with 172 San Antonians during the 2016 presidential campaign regarding the candidate's statements about Islam. And so here's a clip from that performance.
I grew up so patriotic and loving my country. There are many things, many, many, many things that I'm very proud of. I'm not proud of this election. I don't have a good feeling.
Trump really wants to try to make America safe, I guess. To be honest, I think his immigration plans are actually pretty good.
The whole make America great means make America white.
People ask me, is Islam a religion of peace or a religion of violence? I answer, yes, because it's both. Islam, you never know.
Their treatment of women was beyond belief.
Someone asked me once, who are you voting for? Honestly, I'm going to vote for the person whose rhetoric doesn't get me killed.
I don't hear a lot of what's called moderate Muslims standing up for moderation.
Oftentimes I've heard, hey, terrorists, get out of our country.
I think people in general are scared of what they don't know.
It's very hard to keep yourself mentally stable when all of this stuff is going around. You really have to hang on to your rationality.
To Be Honest will be performed tonight at 6:30 at the McNay Art Museum's Leeper Auditorium, and it's free, open to the public. And Texas Public Radio's Dare to Listen campaign is a partner with this performance. We're talking about Islamophobia in the United States in relations to the most recent presidential campaign and here and what's going on today in America. Call in with your ideas and comments. The number of questions, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this afternoon by Sarah Beth Kaufman, professor of sociology and anthropology at Trinity University. Habida Noor is an instructor at Trinity University, currently researching Islam in the 2016 presidential elections. Hannah Niner is a recent Trinity graduate and research assistant for the To Be Honest project. Welcome, all y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
What was the genesis of this project? How did y'all decide we need to start talking to people now and preserve these comments? And did you know what you were going to do with them at the time?
The project began in around November of 2015. We knew that we wanted to do some research right around the time of right after the announcement of the Muslim ban, or Trump's proposed Muslim ban. And actually, Dr. Kaufman can talk a little bit more about how that idea started. Or Sarah Beth.
Sure. We never know if we're in class or if we're alone together whether to call ourselves by our professional names or our first names. Anyway, Trump made this statement as a presidential candidate. And as you said in your introduction, there were really contrasting opinions about it. Some people thought, yes, we should ban Muslims from coming into the United States as a matter of safety. And some people were shocked that we would discriminate on the basis of religion in a country that has written into its constitution religious freedom. And so we actually were part of a group early on that went to a mosque, actually, to, from our kind of personal perspectives, say that we were among the group that were concerned about prohibitions on religious freedom. And we were holding signs outside a mosque saying, you know, we stand with our Muslim neighbors. And I was very surprised at how moved people seemed to be that we were there. And my work is usually in doing research with people in the community, qualitative sociological research, and I thought immediately, oh my gosh, I want to hear these people's voices. And so I was co-teaching with Dr. Noor at the time, Habiba, and I knew that her background is in scholarship around American politics and the Muslim question, as we've come to call it now. And so together we talked about how to conceptualize this research.
So you decided, let's go talk to people. Let's go harvest their opinions while they're still fresh, while we're caught in the moment. And how did you do that?
Of course, with any research, we couldn't just jump right out into the field. We needed to get approval from the Trinity's IRB board, and we needed to really make a plan because we are social scientists, and so we like to have a plan. And so we talked about doing it a couple of different ways. Habiba was very wise in saying, you know, just interviewing folks about a single experience doesn't really help you understand them as much as if you contextualize it. And so we talked about a couple of options. We said, should we, you know, interview Muslims about the kind of history of the experience of coming to San Antonio, kind of, and do a historical look? Or my research interest is generally around criminalization. So I have mostly worked on the African-American experience and mass incarceration. And so I started thinking about it as a moment in history where we criminalize a group that's formerly kind of considered like any other group of Americans. And so Habiba and I together figured out that what we wanted to do was really capture that moment of kind of potential criminalization of how some people were saying, yes, this is a criminal group. We need to, you know, protect the United States from it. And the experience of being called criminal, right, of the people who we saw at the mosque. And so get all of the perspectives. So, you know, our goal became to interview Muslims, Sikhs, Jews, Christians, Catholics, evangelical Christians, you know, every kind of group across the political and religious spectrum.
Now we have tonight an opportunity to see what you got. And it looks like we're going to get a lot of opinions, a lot of people's personal stories. We're realizing how complicated this can be. And when we come back from break, we're going to hear a little bit more of the performance that y'all have. And this is going to, we're talking about To Be Honest. It's part of TPR's Dare to Listen campaign. It's going to be at the McNay Art Museum, turning the spotlight on Islam in presidential politics and in our current politics as well. You're invited to call in with your comments and questions. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this quick break.
We're in this, you know, post-9/11 state of consciousness. That's like what the environment is that we've grown up in. They're like, maybe see it as maybe more prone to violence than Christianity.
It's actually my first time ever paying attention to a presidential election. This political election is really interesting, though, yeah.
My granddaughter is 21. She started dating a young man from Libya. I said, do you know about Libya? She goes, no, where is it? I said, Alicia, are you telling me you don't know where Libya is after all that's been happening in the Middle East? They don't read newspapers. Everything is a soundbite.
That is a portion of a performance that's going to be held tonight, To Be Honest. It is a presentation of of interviews of 172 San Antonians during the 2016 presidential campaign regarding statements about Islam. Islam was a big part of that campaign, you might remember. 70-minute production. It's emotional. It's intimate. It's at times, it's a difficult look at San Antonians' opinions about Islam and this place in American politics. And we're talking about that this afternoon. If you got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We've got a caller here. Let's get him on the air. This is Joey. And Joey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. You've got conflicting opinions. You've got people who say that Islam is a peaceful religion, and you've got people who say it's a violent religion, and they use the Quran. And now I don't know if you've ever heard of Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, and that's where a lot of people, they have conflict. As a matter of fact, in prison, many people of African-American descent are forming their own Islamic groups and things like that. So you've got...
Okay, Joey, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate that. So that is an opinion that a lot of people have. They wonder, well, you know, Islam, is it a religion of peace, as some say? But then there are some portions of the Quran text that do call for, that's not peaceful. So can you talk about that, Habita Noor?
Yeah. Well, I just want to start by reflecting on that question. And it's a question that comes over and over and over again. And it just, the focus is always on Islam. Is Islam violent or Islam, is Islam peaceful? Well, I would like to also ask, is America violent or is America peaceful? Is Christianity violent or is Christianity peaceful? Is Buddhism violent or is Buddhism peaceful? I think what we're seeing right now going on in Myanmar is challenging people's ideas of Buddhism. So my issue is starting with that question. Why do we constantly ask that question? I think that one of the things that this work, this stage production does, is it takes that question back a little bit. And I think that, you know, the issue is not about who is violent and who is peaceful. I think we have to go back and recalibrate and just connect with humans. Like, who deserves the rights, human rights, who deserve to be acknowledged as a human. This question is asked over and over again. You can find violent verses in the text. I think practicing Muslims have been, and even non-practicing Muslims have been answering this question perpetually for the last 15 years about, you know, is Islam violent or is it peaceful? And there are billion plus of them that will say that it is peaceful, and many others will concur. So I think that, you know, we have to, part of the goal of this work is to kind of be a little critical of the questions that we have come to take for granted, and return to this question of who is entitled to human. And also it's this question of what, you know, the thing about this work is that it deals with two issues that people are afraid to talk about. All right, religion and politics. And it's very difficult to talk about these things. And actually this play does both. And it kind of gives the audience an out because they don't actually have to talk about it, but they're hearing all of it on stage. And it helps the conversation because you have the words of these other people to help you navigate these conversations.
So you mentioned, you know, is Christian a peaceful religion or a violent religion? And right. People may say, wait, what are you talking about? How can you say that about, you know, but, you know, we have things like this Texas pastor, Robert Jeffress. He is one of Trump's closest evangelical advisors. And he's recently said that God has given Trump permission to do a first strike nuclear attack on North Korea. And this is a person that has a 12,000 member church in Dallas, and he's a very prominent individual. So, you know, you have to wonder, you have to weigh that as a leader of the Christian faith and a person who is very close to the commander in chief who has command over the nuclear weapons. Is he preaching peace or is he preaching something else? You know, so as you point out, this is a very complicated issue. And as we start breaking out the fat wide brushes and start painting things, we're going to realize that things get messy really quick and you don't always paint what you intend to. So did you want to add to that, Sarah Beth Kaufman?
Well, I was just going to add that this is what our work really tries to get behind, is why we hear the kinds of questions that we just did over and over again, and why aren't they answered satisfactorily, right? We try to show how complicated the questions are. So, for example, there's a character in the play who is asking these questions actively, like he's trying to figure it out as he's talking to the audience. And I think that we have to acknowledge that, you know, these are much more complicated questions than we usually have time for in sound bites.
Right. Let me get another caller. This is Tom, 210-614-8980, if you want to join in. Hey, Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to make a point. I served 12 months in Iraq, and I can attest that we could not have done what we did without many hundreds, maybe thousands of decent, good Muslim interpreters. You know, they weren't just interpreters. They were cultural guides. They really kept us out of trouble. And I don't think we can win any kind of a war against terrorism without people just like that.
Tom, thank you for the call. I sure do appreciate that. And so, Sarah Beth, like you want to say something?
Yeah, and I really appreciate that voice. We do have several military vets in our production tonight who have really been honest with us about their intensity of their experiences abroad. And, you know, San Antonio is a military community, and there's a lot of knowledge out there that we often don't hear from. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Hannah Niner, you are a Trinity graduate research assistant for the To Be Honest Project. You were one of the many who went out and harvested these interviews, talked to people, got these opinions directly from the source. What was that experience like?
It was really amazing being able to sit down with such diverse people and really just dive into really deep, honest conversations that you usually don't get to have on the day-to-day basis. I found it to be really a humanizing experience. Sometimes you sit down and start the interview, and it's pretty obvious early on that you and the person you're interviewing have completely different political views, outlooks on life. But I thought it was really powerful to be able to, you know, sit down for an hour, have a deep conversation, and then kind of be able to leave that conversation, maybe not necessarily agreeing with that person, but being able to understand their point of view.
And those point of views, they vary quite a bit.
Oh, yes. Especially for me, I was able to talk to people who were very conservative, who were very into, I guess, like anti-Muslim movements, I guess you could say. And then I was able to also talk to Muslims themselves, Sikhs, a really diverse group of people.
Okay, so that brings up this this point about how we talk about Muslims in our popular culture, in our Hollywood films, presented frequently as villains, as terrorists. We have 24-hour news networks that speak about them as enemies of the American people, that they want to destroy America, and that we need to make their homelands glow with bombs and send them back to the Stone Age. So if someone were to sample that dialogue and productions and bring them into their parts of the world, you know, that would be offensive to them. And so, I mean, do we look at it that way, Habiba?
Yes. I mean, I think that I think that Hollywood can be blamed for some of the stereotypes. I think that actually the news is more guilty, and I think that it's primarily because, you know, peaceful Muslims don't make good news, right? This is a problem that we have, that it's the emotional tragedies that somehow are part of the news cycle. And I think that, you know, an interesting thing is that, you know, these this news is in some ways, it's the same news that's broadcast over all over the world, right? In Pakistan, the news also reports stories about jihadis that are blowing things up and causing havoc. But, you know, the difference between the audiences in Muslim countries and the audiences in the United States is the United States, in America, there isn't the general framework. They haven't had encounters with Muslims. So it might be the same media, but it's a different audience. And so, yeah, actually, that's my background is audience research and audience studies. And this, you know, what we're doing right now is we're talking to that audience and hearing their concerns. And many, you know, it's a real split. It's not that everyone is afraid of Muslims. There are many people who are not and who think that the allegations are actually quite absurd.
Well, we saw that when Donald Trump announced his initial Muslim ban, many people went to airports across the country and demonstrated. And you wanted to say something, Sarah Beth?
Yeah, I was just going to use the words of our interviewees, who one of the words that we heard again and again that we were trying to understand, lots of people in San Antonio would describe they would say, well, the Muslim population is being scapegoated right now, and that there have been other populations in American history that have been scapegoated. And we'd say, well, what do you mean by scapegoated? And we'd get into discussions that about race and religion, right? Is this because Muslims are seen as non-American, as only over there, when in fact, you know, a good portion of our country is Muslim, a good portion of our city is Muslim, and we Americans, in fact, are Muslim, right? We're Muslim, we're Jewish, we're Christian. And so some of our interviewers were really trying to understand why right now there is this tremendous fear of Islam, when at different points of history there's been fear of other religions and religious sects.
Do you know what the proportion is in San Antonio, what's our population of Muslim?
It's quite small. But I think they say about 30,000. That's what I've heard is the number. It's a small population in relation to the whole society. But what's interesting is that this small population is causing this anxiety. And political scientists have referred to this as the Muslim question. You know, the issue is not about the religion, but the religion is causing Americans to challenge their own ideas of what it means to live in a democracy, to challenge their ideas of free speech, to challenge their ideas of women's rights in some ways, or the feminist movement. Because, you know, if Muslims are allowed extreme free speech, then some people think that they're at risk of a terrorist attack. And so the issue that I think we're exploring is how the religion of Islam and political Islam has actually become this divide, a fault line for Americans. And it's not something that's neatly divided along partisan issue. It's not like Republicans all think this way and Democrats think another way. I mean, I think we see examples of Republicans who are very empathetic to the Muslims in the United States. And we see, you know, George Bush was one of them in some ways, in that he said Islam is a religion of peace.
Sure. Post 9/11, he was very careful to not to try to say this is a war against the Muslim religion, because he knew that wasn't the problem.
Right.
It was about terrorism and people who were trying to hijack the Muslim religion for their own power needs. We'll talk about that more when we come back. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you think we are guilty of groupthink and echo chamber, give us a call. Challenge us. We want to hear from everyone in San Antonio, because this is a community conversation. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break.
My first reaction to the Orlando shooting was, oh my God, I hope it wasn't a Muslim. When I heard it was a Muslim, I was like, oh no, here we go. They're going to start harassing us again. The days after, I was in the store and there was a man who came up to me. I recognized he was gay, and I was scared that he was going to do something to me because he saw that I was a Muslim. I started trying to walk as fast as I could to my car because I got scared that he was going to do something to me just because of my religious choice. He told me, I don't have a problem with you. He came just to tell me he doesn't have a problem with Muslims for what happened.
The ancient Greeks, they invented theater, and they thought theater was so important for a community as a catharsis to deal with traumatic events that they even paid poor people to go to the theater and see their tragedies and events on stage at the time. They can't pay you to go see, to be honest, but it's free and it's open to the public. It's tonight at the McNay Museum. It's being was put together by Trinity University as part of their Dare to Listen campaign here in San Antonio, talking about Islamophobia and also its involvement with our politics. We invite you into our conversation, 210-614-8980. And Elizabeth has been holding. Elizabeth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, and I'm going to thank your presenter for all the work that must have gone into this production. It's very worthwhile. My own comment is that I have a problem with Christians who take one perhaps section of the Quran or two and accuse the anyone who is Muslim of using that to justify violence against this country and is out, so to speak, to get us. Because if we look at the Christian Bible and take some phrases out of context, one of the Psalms talks about taking the children of our enemies and dashing their heads against a stone. So the same accusation could be made towards us if we take if they were to take our own Christian writings out of context in the same simplistic way and accuse us of being a violent people. So we have to be, I think, aware that scriptures in the general, no matter what they are usually very complex, especially when it comes to interpretation and application.
Sister, thank you so much, Sister Elizabeth. Appreciate your calling in. And so it's not just writings, though. We have seen, application of those writings. We have beheadings and other brutal examples in countries that are, dominated by inner theocracies, Muslim theocracies. So how do we parse that out, Habiba Noor?
Yeah, I think Saudi Arabia, for example, has a pre-modern system of punishment, right? I don't know what the century was in France where they used to chop heads off.
The guillotine?
It's been a while.
Reign of Terror.
It's been a while. And, in the modern societies, they don't do this anymore. But
we have capital punishment.
We have capital punishment. And there's also just, lifetime imprisonment, incarceration, which also is
for teenagers, for someone who convicts committed a crime when they're 17 years old, they can be put away in prison for life.
This is what always interests me is my work is around violence and punishment. And, we are just a tremendously violent country, for kind of those of us that think of the United States as majority Christian, which it is, we've got upwards of 16,000 homicides a year. Most of those are committed by Christians. The vast majority of people who identify as, some Christianity in their background. And that's outrageous in the world. As one of our characters says in the play, he says, right now, this is again this scapegoat thing, like right now, that we're supposed to be scared of this caliphate thing. And he says, unfortunately, there are people, there are jihadis who are using, Islam to be violent. And so
and
it
exists.
And
fatwas put on people's lives.
Absolutely.
Like Salman
it exists. And another fatwa, that doesn't get put in the news, but you'll see in a clip tonight, is that 70,000 Muslim clerics came together and said that this jihadi killing was wrong. So it's like there are lots of societies that are dealing with violence, including ours, on an everyday basis, that for one reason or another that, we talk about at length in our classes, don't make it into the news. What's been fun about the research project, along with Hannah and Habib and myself, Bill Christ has been one of our collaborators. He's a professor in the communications department. and a couple of other students who were religion majors. And they were drawn to this project because that's what they've really gotten into, is this kind of comparative religion thing. And once, I think we've got a great religion department at Trinity, and I think once you start looking at religion from an academic perspective, you start realizing that there's a lot more in common between these major world religions than there is difference. So Islam and Judaism and Christianity are all Abrahamic religions. There's Abraham in the Bible, in the Quran, and in the Bible. There's Moses in the Quran. You know, and a lot of people don't know that. And I think our students, and maybe, I don't know if Hannah wants to tell us about her experience, you know, it's like, it's very exciting to work with college students on this because they're just learning this. You know, they're like, oh my goodness, this is much more interesting than than I thought.
So Hannah Niner, can you talk about that? How, I mean, I'm really interested in what, as younger persons, what millennials think about this. Because the context is different, and this is, you're inheriting this conversation.
Yeah, I think a lot of millennials, their consciousness, their knowing what's going on in the world really started after 9/11. So Dr. Noor kind of touched on it, how the news and other sources in the media really frames Muslims and Islam is how we as a generation, like as horrible as it sounds, have come to understand Islam and Muslims, which I find very problematic. We've learned about this religion through the context of war. And I think that's really important to point out. And the fact that, you know, personally, my family is not anti-Muslim in like the slightest, but there was a silence, I feel like, almost in older generations. It was either, you know, against Muslims, or there was just like a silence where nobody really walked a lot of us in my generation through this understanding of the complexity of religion and fear and like all these complex questions that we're asking today.
Can I make a side point that there's a silence around religion, but I think that the big silence is also around politics, right? And that we end up turning these conflicts into questions of religion, when they are questions of politics. They are political grievances that people are acting upon when they commit these acts. So I think that we've been kind of hoodwinked in some way by people in thinking that in order to find answers to this question, we need to go to the Quran.
Right.
When in fact, I think that we have a somewhat unsophisticated language around understanding politics and sort of the implications of American foreign policy in some parts of the world. And so it's becoming, I don't think that looking at religion is going to help answer these very real problems that exist in other parts of the world.
And what people do have in common across religions who are violent is that they're mostly young men, and mostly young men who have come from contexts that are not ones that we want to live in. And so, you know, if we look at the experience of impoverished masculinity, now we're starting to get to, you know, core causes of violence.
I'm going to go to the caller. This is Sean. Sean, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me on. I wanted to touch on two things. First of all, one of your presenters mentioned earlier that interviewers were interested in getting to the bottom of why people had this perhaps negative perception of Muslims or Islam in general. And I found that interesting because to me the answer to that question is self-evident. When you look at the number of Muslims in San Antonio, you mentioned the number 30,000. Most people don't interact with Muslims on a daily basis or even get interact with them at all. And then when you look at the coverage that overwhelmingly, at least majorly covered terrorism in the world, seems to be predominantly Islamic extremism, that people are going to have this perception that Islam is associated with terrorism. What we do with that bias, what we do with that perception, different question entirely. And then as a side note, something your presenter just mentioned, that Oh, you know what? I've completely lost my train of thought.
That's okay, Sean. That's fine. But thank you for calling. I appreciate that. You brought enough. I appreciate that. So he's talking about the way that, you know, we're not really seeing all the different sides of the Muslim community here in San Antonio, across the nation, and around the world. And so do we get more of an idea with the presentation of, to be honest, this evening with the with that?
Absolutely. We have some Muslims on stage. Two that grew up in San Antonio, two that are Iraqi refugees. And the way they talk about these things is very different. For the Iraqi refugees, they are, you know, the title of the play is To Be Honest, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is 100% honest. I would say that these two refugees are, maybe at one point they were honest about their politics, but having come through a civil war, they have learned that actually being 100% honest in your politics can actually cost you your life. So not everybody is honest, and for sometimes it's for a good reason. And just, you know, and many people are afraid to be honest because of the, they don't want to offend. And so some people are actually resentful of that. And so that's a part of this particular election in time where people are frustrated by the culture of political correctness. And I think it's complicated. I think the political correctness is...
what does that mean? Well, we don't have that time to talk about, to break that down. But it's interesting that when, you know, if you're in the left, a progressive, it's very difficult to actually be critical of Islam, because then you don't want to join ranks with those who are totally bigoted and have an irrational fear of Muslims. And so, you know, is there a lane for anyone who wants to be critical and say, well, I support, you know, Islam as a religion, but I don't support their anti-feminist point of view or anti-gay, you know, stuff that they do, or any other intolerance that comes from that religion. Mm-hmm. We can try and talk about that when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Islam in American politics. It's a topic that's been taken up and is presented on stage tonight at To Be Honest. It's a partner with TPR's Dare to Listen campaign, the McNay Art Museum, turning the spotlight on Islam in American presidential politics. We invite you to call in and tell us your thoughts and your questions, 210-614-8980. Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Just wanted to say I'm very appreciative of all the work that all of y'all are doing right now. I am a college student, a college history student, and, you know, as a college history student, I'm required to take world history, and I'm taking Islamic world classes as well, but national history is what is required and not world history as college-level students, so maybe you guys could talk about how that influences higher-level thinking, and also, how appealing it is all across the world, and what Islam is a response to. How it has come to be. None of those things are really available to even most college-level students because they don't have to take those classes.
All right, Mark, appreciate that. So Islam as a response to that is a very insightful way of looking at this, because even they say the genesis of Islam was a response to Western dominance in the area. And so, I mean, as a response to Christianity. So, and that's why Islam spread so quickly in its early days. That there was a hunger for some sort of identity in the Middle East at the time, as they called it, the Bible lands. But it's still a reactional type of religion at times, isn't it?
I wanted to go back for a minute just to say to the caller, you know, yay college. It's very cool that you know, one of the things about this project has been that you learn these things, and it takes learning. We have to just take a minute to say how grateful we are to Trinity University for giving us this opportunity, giving us the space to really show all of these different sides. And, you know, one of the things that our students have really talk to us about, and again is in the play, is this notion that Islam is anti-gay and anti-feminist, as you said. One of the millennials says, well, I don't know, you know, is it anti-feminist that we have to, like, bear so much of our bodies, right? And Muslim women are supposed to, you know, and so she really questions whether it's a feminist act maybe to choose not to display your body.
So, like, the question is, like, what is more oppressive, to wear a bikini or a burqa?
Yeah, and really, why take the position of being non-oppressive of women here in the United States? As she pointed out,
well, being able to drive.
In most Muslim countries, you can drive. It's very true that in Saudi Arabia, you can't. However, in, you know,
everywhere else in the Muslim
Egypt,
world.
Yeah, I mean, you can. So
that's Saudi Arabia. That's not Islam, actually.
But, you know, extreme religions are anti-gay. You know, like, if you take an, you know, Orthodox Jewish, you know, religious perspective is going to be anti-gay and is going to separate the genders during prayer. You know, so it's like, again, this framing right now is all about, like, this is about Islam, when actually this is about really extreme religious positions. And it's sometimes it was the students who reminded us of this, who are saying, like, you know, we struggle with eating disorders, you know, because of the way that women are treated in this world, you know, in our world. And so they've really helped us, like, reframe the questions that get posed.
Okay, I'm going to call her. This is Roxana. Roxana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, again, my name's Roxana. And this is, my question is, well, let me frame it first. We hosted an exchange student in Afghanistan in our home about 7 years ago, and it was a wonderful experience. I feel like I do know quite a bit about the religion. But one of the things that I feel like is missing in our conversation today, and maybe your panelists might address this, is where are the voices of kind of nationwide, worldwide, the moderates, the family that I hosted, where are they speaking up, you know, out loud after every time there's an act that happens that makes us all so sad? And I'm looking for that, and that kind of voice of reason and that moderate voice to be spoken loudly.
Habiba Noor?
Is she still on the air?
Yes.
Can I ask her a question?
Okay.
Why do you feel like, do you think that many Muslims don't condemn? Do you think that most Muslims agree?
No. I do, but I feel, but I believe it, and I know, I think that I am looking for that, and we talked about earlier, you guys spoke earlier, there are so few Muslims in San Antonio, and so if we don't have a personal contact, for instance, I think maybe some people, if they heard it more loudly, they might realize that this is not a religion of violence.
Yes,
if they heard that, spoke to them more loudly.
You know, I'm a Muslim, and I'm actively involved in the Muslim community here. And I can tell you that the Muslim community in San Antonio, Muslim community in Texas, the United States, in Britain, and Canada have been doing this condemnation after every single act. And if you haven't seen it, it's just that maybe you haven't looked in the right places. The Dialogue Institute of San Antonio is constantly reaching out to a variety of communities in San Antonio, MCECC, CARE. And what happens is that their preoccupation has been condemnation. And, you know, one of the characters of this work, the person that we interviewed, you know, his whole career in some ways and his preoccupation is defined around this constant condemnation. And there are people that are just constantly doing this to a point where actually it's stripping us of our capacity to engage in the society, because there's only one job that the Muslims have, which is to condemn the terrorist. Whereas, you know, we don't hear the same expectation. Well, actually, every marginal group in some way is expected to speak for themselves and to condemn. But that's actually, I want us to really think about why are we expecting this condemnation for every act that's happening.
If we were in class, we would say, okay, everyone, take out your cell phones and Google Muslims condemn violent act. And we would say, how many sites do you see? And there would be hundreds of thousands. And as Habiba said before, you know, peaceful Muslims don't make the news. And our colleague Bilk Christ, who's in the communications department, you know, and Habiba, their work is about kind of how problems are framed in the media. Well, and part of that is got to be part of this conversation.
But there is political capital to be earned by trying to exploit the so that you call the Muslim question. Yeah. You know, there are people out there who are want to gain votes and gain donations, and by having ogre out there that is threatening America, and we're able to whip up fear, and that's a political tool as old as democracy itself. Mm-hmm. And is that part of the problem?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's research that's been conducted. There's a really great book by a sociologist named Christopher Bale. And also many work by many different groups, including the Council of American Islamic Relations. And what their research shows is that the anti-Muslim sentiment has actually increased since 9/11. I can tell you anecdotally how I personally feel, like how that's been the case. We didn't have threats on mosques quite in the same way, like right after 9/11, like we're doing now, like we have now. Like since 2009, it's just increased. And you can look up CARE's website, and you will find the statistics on this. That you know that the threats are a part of the everyday, and you know and many of these threats don't get reported in the news. So it's very uncomfortable. Sometimes, you know, there might be a threat in a mosque.
And the vandalism.
And vandalism, yes. And, you know, there's even like a few years ago at the Islamic school in San Antonio, there was a man that came around and was threatening children with a gun. But that did not make national news. You know, and this was right around the same time as Newtown. And so this is what people are living with. And there are some people that, I think many of the practicing Muslims, they're not going to let that stop them. There might be a threat to a mosque, but they're still going to go. And so you just have to accept. You have to just live your life. And what else can you do? So, yeah. So.
Well, you can have a play.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, we've been talking about this play as something that gets behind the kinds of media experiences that our caller was just reflecting, right?
Absolutely.
She was saying, how
Absolutely.
Come there's not this, right? And this is kind of what our play does. It says, like, there is this, right? There's all kinds of...
I mean, it's great. Like, what I love about this play is that it's taking everything that... you know, various sound bites that are in social media, and it's putting it on stage. And we're moving past. We're kind of like, this is like an analog social media experience, you know. It's you know, it's good to get away from the screen and to kind of experience what it's like to be among people breathing and hearing their breath and hearing their emotions and their tears or their laughter or joy. But so it is kind of like an analog social media experience. And my interest is in media studies, and I'm doing this sort of analog experience. But I think we're kind of coming to a point where we've had this oversaturation of the social media polemics, which is why I think this theater project is really exciting. And thanks to Stacey Connolly, our theater colleague at Trinity, who has inspired us in this way, because we are not, we don't have backgrounds in script development, but we really owe a lot of thanks to her.
All right. And To Be Honest will be performed tonight at 6:30 at the McNay Art Museum's Leaper Auditorium. This is free and open to the public. First come, first serve for a seat. Texas Public Radio's Dare to Listen campaign is a partner in this performance. I want to thank our guests this afternoon, Sarah Beth Kaufman, professor of sociology, anthropology at Trinity University. Habiba Noor is the constructor at Trinity University's currently researching Islam in the 2016 presidential election. And Hannah Niner is a recent Trinity grad and a researcher assistant with the To Be Honest project. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you so much for tuning us in.